Welcome in, everybody, to the CC Podcast. It is the evening of Sunday, March 17th, a.k.a. Selection Sunday, which doesn't mean much to us on the men's side this year, but on the women's side, Cards are a six seed, playing Middle Tennessee State, potentially a matchup with Haley Van Lith and LSU in the second round. We're excited about that. Should be a lot of fun down there in Baton Rouge. But the big talk today on the pod, at least, is going to be, of course, what has transpired since the last time we spoke, which is the end of the Kenny Payne era, if you want to call 2 years an era, and the coaching search madness talk that has taken over the city of Louisville since then. We'll talk about all that good stuff, but Dan Sinard is up, getting ready for a Disney World trip, following the Rutherford family footsteps. How geared up are we? How excited are we? How prepared are we for the most magical place on earth, Dan?
I'm glad you asked. Shocker. I've done absolutely no planning. my wife has like a notebook full of shit. Apparently it's like you got to have your ducks in a row when you go down there. I'm pretty sure my wife talked to your wife and
they
whatever.
Did. They did. They talked.
So yeah, we are looking forward to it, but
you sound like you're looking forward to it.
Well, here's the deal. Like, I'm not like a big Disney guy. here's the deal. It's for the kids. I'm excited for the kids. I'm not a big Disney guy. I've done it like I did it like 3 years ago, and it was, you know, like we have fun when we're there. Just the thought of it, I'm like, oh, Disney. But with that being said, like, I mean, my mind is just where everyone else's mind is. It's like on this coaching search. So I'm going to be on Space Mountain thinking about how much money we can possibly throw at Scott Drew. So, yeah, should be a good time, though.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we – I can't even keep it straight. The last time we podcasted, it was before the conference tournament. So since then, you know, what we all knew was going to happen has officially happened. It still felt nice to actually hear it, you know?
Yeah.
There's still that little part. I mean, I've heard a million times from a million people who would know that, like, don't worry, like, this is over. Like, this is going to end. There's no year three. We've known this for several months, but still there's that little piece of doubt in the back of your mind that's like, oh my God, like I'd have to quit all my jobs, I think, if we had a third year of this. I can't do this for another year. And we got the official word pretty early on Wednesday. I guess news started to break late Tuesday, which I love the insider reports that are out there. Like Jeff Goodman and people that are like, hearing that Louisville expects to move on from Kenny Payne, it's like, no fucking shit. Of course we expect. How is that a report? But then we got some more specific reports as Tuesday night rolled on. People saying it's going to be done Wednesday morning when he lands. And Payne got the full, like, OJ treatment. Like, the full, like, Rick Pitino being hired. We had choppers at the team plane landing as Kenny Payne got to. It felt like a little much. But we got the official word shortly after noon on Wednesday that Josh Hurd put out the statement saying the UofL men's basketball program is moving in a different direction. It did feel like oddly cathartic to just, even though you knew it was coming, just to know that this page that we've been talking about turning for the last 4 months or 20 months, it felt like, has finally been turned. It's a new chapter. We don't know exactly what's next, and that's the big discussion. But it felt good to just be able to officially take that next step and officially have this coaching search conversation with the coaching search officially being on.
100%. And not, I mean, obviously, as a fan of Louisville, you know, with the ACC tournament, like, yes, it would have been nice to get a win, I guess, like for the kids. And would we have like gone on to do anything? I mean, obviously what NC State did was incredible, but I don't think, you know, there's a better chance of hell freezing over than us making a run like that.
They took our spot.
They did. But with that being said, like, I'm actually glad, like, it wouldn't have felt right for, like, Louisville to win and, like, have, like, this nice, like, peaceful, like, well, I guess we have to let him go. Like, Kenny Payne basically gave us the middle finger on the way out. We're like, thank God this shit is over. Like, it was, like, one of those deals. So, with the way the last 2 years have gone, it feels like that that was very, I guess you could say, poetic with how that happened. So just
it did
like
make me feel better, too. Like you mentioned the NC State stuff. Because there was a part of me, as the game was happening on Tuesday, where I was like, despite everything, I still want one more game. Like, I still want to watch him play. Like, I know he's gone. But if you look at it, there's a real chance that NC State would have fired Kevin Keats, who I really, really like. yeah. if they'd lost that game. And instead, he gets a 2-year contract extension. So, like, looking back on it, I was sad that they lost in the moment, just because I'm always going to be sad when the season ends. But now I'm like, okay, good came out of it. I feel
Kevin
fine
Keats
about losing
is a
the game.
Winner.
Kevin Keats is a goddamn winner. Absolutely a winner. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but I mean, I think everyone, I mean, we're all on the same page here. I mean, geez, I would say 70% of the fan base has been probably waiting for this for over a year. And like the 30% that wasn't seemed to be the loudest for whatever reason. But I think in the back of everyone's mind, we knew where this was headed. And now that we like can like talk about it kind of out in the open, it feels nice, even though, you know, these are the anxious weeks here, Josh really has to kind of, I mean, I don't even know how to say it. He has to play his hand correctly there's a lot of moving parts to this, it seems like.
I'd actually forgotten about the post-game press conference until you just brought it up. Like, so much has happened since then, y'all. Coaching search rumors, which we're going to get into. You know, I'm doing stuff for SB Nation for the tournament. I've just written like 50,000 words about championship week and now today, Selection Sunday. So much so that I'd forgotten about the national news that we made on Tuesday, which had nothing to do with the actual game, but Kenny Payne's post-game press conference. You've seen like, so a decent amount of coaches have gotten fired. It's, you know, the end of the road for a lot of guys. And I've been struck by, they've all had these really classy statements. Like Jared Haas at Stanford knew he was going to get fired. So when they lose, he gives this great speech about how wonderful it was to be like a Stanford Cardinal and how much it means to him. Same thing with Mike Hopkins at Washington. He gets all teary eyed talking about how it means something for the kids. And then even guys who didn't know they were going to get fired, like Mike Boynton at Oklahoma State puts out a video on all his social media channels talking about what a privilege it was and all this stuff. Juwan Howard put out a statement for Michigan today. And the only person who hasn't given any sort of statement since they were fired has been Kenny Payne, which means our lasting image of him talking to us is quite literally comparing Louisville basketball to the Titanic and criticizing fans who wanted to jump off the Titanic, which I tweeted this out and I'll say the exact same thing I did then. They always talk about how in real life there are no perfect endings. Kenny Payne attempting to paint a metaphor where Louisville men's basketball is the Titanic and he's critical of the fans that want to get off the Titanic is the most perfect possible way for this whole thing to end. And also, like, taking no accountability. I gave the spiel last week about him. It's like a Bravo reunion where there's never any self-reflection, never any like internal change. And he goes out. I told you exactly how this was going to end. Like, he doubles down on everything. He blamed not just us. He blamed the city of Louisville for the problems. Like, he makes up a total lie about how he told us on day one that it was going to take 3 to 4 years. Never said that at his introductory press conference. In fact, you can go back to June of that year. He did a local TV interview after a camp where he said, we're going to be good. And if we get some of these guys that we're going after, we're going to be really good. That was his proclamation. And then I think they realized they struck out in the transfer portal. He saw the team practice throughout the summer and then the early fall. And the message was much different when October rolled around. And he was like, it's going to take a while. But that first day, there was never any, it's going to take 3 to 4 years here. So just total lie there. And there's no point in harping too much on it. It's over now. It's done. We finally get to move on. But my God, just what an appropriately awful way to just say your goodbyes without saying your goodbyes.
I was cracking up because I think a lot of us have been like, man, I can't wait for like 3 to 4 years when we hear all the shit that went on behind the scenes and we can really see what a mess this is. It's like, how about 24 hours? Eric Crawford's like, Nolan Smith actually is the one that leaked out Kenny was getting fired. Now they're not fucking talking. It's like, oh my God, like what in the hell is going, like, can we just have one goddamn normal coaching staff for one goddamn season? Like,
no.
Oh my God. Like, whoever we bring in, like, please, let's vet our assistants. Let's do our due diligence. Like, we just want to, let's start like baby steps. Let's be a normal basketball program. Like, we'll start with
saying.
That and then we'll get good.
Yeah, the Crawford thing comes out. I think that I've said it on this podcast. If I haven't, I know I alluded to it on the radio show, talking about the rift between Kenny Payne and Nolan Smith. Like, that had been sort of talked about for a long time. And if I haven't said it on the podcast, I'll go ahead and say it now. like my understanding this entire time has been there was a, I was told by multiple people, people who I trust, that there was a blow up between Kenny Payne and Nolan Smith back in, I guess, July, August, it was the summer, whenever the Trenton Flowers stuff happened, whenever Trenton Flowers got here and then announced he was leaving, Kenny blamed Nolan Smith for that. And then also blamed Nolan for, at the time, Tylar Johnson being ineligible. And that led to them getting into it, Kenny, Nolan having some issues with that, and kind of irreparably damaging their relationship. And then there was the, you know, Nolan interviewed for the G League job. I don't care. I'll say what I've heard for a while. Like, I was told that pretty much everybody at UofL was hoping he got the G League job because there were some issues there, did not get along with a lot of people. And like, that was that. Like they didn't really talk. And then now you've got the report from Crawford saying, oh yeah, when it was getting leaked to national media sources, I think Shirley Donovan, that Payne was going to get fired and that Nolan Smith was going to be the replacement. It was Nolan who was leaking that. And that was never the case. I mean, like, I've told you all the story about what was going to happen. Like, they were going to get rid of the entire staff. They were going to bring in an interim staff, and then it got nixed that week. That's the story. I'll put my name by that. So Nolan leaking it is funny. You've also, like, some family members and some people that are close to Nolan Smith, I think now are kind of going on the offensive. And some, like, people who swore to me that there was no rift between Kenny Payne and Nolan Smith are now hitting me up and being like, oh yeah, there's a rift, but it's KP's a piece of shit. Like, he's sabotaging Nolan's entire career. Like, that's what's happening. Like, Nolan's crushed. He can't believe that they're doing that. I'm like, I don't, at this point, like, I don't care. I don't want to hear about either one of you all ever again. You go one way, you go the other way. Just make sure both directions are way, way, way far away from me and this entire program. Like, I don't want to hear any of it. But it was crazy how quickly all that stuff started coming out. I would say one of the most consistent questions that I've gotten these last, like, couple weeks especially are, like, what stories can you tell me now? Like what stories were going on behind closed doors? And the stories that have been, and maybe other people have other stories, certainly, like, I had never heard the Nolan Smith leaking that to national media thing. So Crawford, maybe some other guys have heard stuff that I haven't heard. But it's not like the last year with Chris Mack and Mike Begese, where everybody was reaching out and telling you, like, oh yeah, this guy and this guy got into a fight over chicken fingers after the game. Like, the stories that I've heard for the last couple of years are just, nobody's going to struggle to believe them. It's just like student managers or parents of players or people that have gone to practice who have been like, you can't fucking believe how bad these practices look. It's just been stuff like that. Like, there was a student manager the first year, he wasn't there the second year, who would send me like DMs and then later texts and just be like, my grade school practices are more organized than this. It's unbelievably bad. Like, it's just been stuff like that. Like no huge blowups. No, I mean, obviously we had the Caron Davis saga, but it's just basically been like, yeah, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, and he's unwilling to listen to everybody around him that's trying to help.
Right.
Which is why I think, Josh, you had the Dr. Ricky Jones tweet about, you know, implying that Payne had been treated unfairly at UofL, and he can tell the stories if he wants to. When I think anybody who's talked to any of the people at UofL have said the same thing consistently for 2 years, which is, we have tried to give him every advantage possible, and he just hasn't wanted to. And if you watch the Josh Hurd press conference on Wednesday, that was the first time where he kind of got worked up.
Yeah.
When Tim Sullivan brought that up, because I think that he was like, he wanted to say, like, do you think that I'm dumb? Basketball steers this entire athletic program ship. How stupid do you think I would have to be to not give the UofL men's basketball head coach everything that he could possibly want to be successful? And I think that was the first time where he was like, don't let anybody tell you that this thing was being sabotaged and that Kenny wasn't set up for success. Like, we gave him every opportunity, and he either declined those opportunities or just didn't know what to do with them. And that's where we are.
It makes you think about something else. Like, I mean, with what a shit show, you know, is going on the practice floor and as far as organized basketball activities. I mean, I know everyone transfers nowadays. Like, I think the easy thing for fans to say is like, dude, everyone's got to go. Like, we got to start from scratch and bring everyone in. But like, then you also think like, geez, like, what if, you know, Brandon Hundley Hatfield like gets some. I mean, yes, he improved a lot. But like, what if he gets like some legit coaching? Like, what if you know Tyler Johnson had like a legit guy that knew what the fuck he was doing, like coaching him up? And that's a whole nother equation you want to think about when you're hiring a coach. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what's going to happen. That you know, with NIL and transfer portal, it could be all new guys. There could be a couple of stick around. I have zero idea, but it does make you think about kind of that basketball aspect that these kids just had no direction whatsoever.
I also like with stuff because people have asked, you know, who would you like to see stick around? I kind of just defer to the new head coach.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm like you. Brandon Huntley Hatfield, he does stuff every single game where you're like, this guy could be one of the better power forwards or centers in college basketball with the right system and the right people around him. And Tyler Johnson, I think there's unlimited potential there. Like, he has unteachable assets. It's still very much a work in progress, obviously. But when you're that quick and you can finish around the rim the way that he does sometimes, like, you can really work with that. So if the Knicks coach wanted to come in and say, like, I can build with those two guys, I'm cool with it. If they want to come in and also say the stench of losing is just too deeply entrenched here, it just it's covering everything, I've just got to completely turn the page and completely go with a blank slate, I also would respect that too. Like, I'm not going to fight and say you've got to keep however many players. Like, whoever the next head coach is, you come in, you kind of have carte blanche. Like we are in such a low spot. We just have to put our faith in you, put our trust in you. You do whatever the hell you got to do to dig us out of this hole, and we're going to go along with it. Should we talk? I guess most people want to listen to this for the coaching search talk. Should we just get into it? I guess.
Yeah. Let's do it.
And look, if you listen to the radio show all last week, a lot of this is going to be repetitive. I do think I have a couple of things to pass on that I have not had a chance to talk about since, you know, the weekend's happened. The last show was Friday, and this is one of the very, it's one of the rare times where I've kind of been like working the phones and talking to a variety of people, just because I feel like in this specific situation, I have access to people that are quote unquote in the know that not a lot of people do. And I kind of owe it to the listeners and the readers and the people who listen to the podcast to get as much out there as I can. And if I hear something, like I'm passing it along. So I'm hopefully this will be helpful, but from to recap last week, from what I'd heard, everyone had heard the same story about Scott Drew being like the runaway front runner, and that's certainly been out there for a couple of weeks now. And on Thursday, I passed along what I had heard, which was that I'm trying to phrase the exact way that I've heard. Like, UofL folks, UofL people, not Josh Hurd specifically, officially met with Scott Drew proxies, is the way that it was put. So representatives for Scott Drew and representatives for UofL had a meeting on Thursday to kind of like initial discussions. Like, this is what we can do. Do we think this is even possible? Let's go a little bit back and forth here. And obviously Baylor was playing in the Big 12 tournament that night, so Drew's not there. His attorney is, I believe, Brett Just, and he works for, was it WME? I think it's the big firm. They represent a ton of not just coaches and athletes, but a lot of celebrities, and it's a big talent agency. And that was like step one. There were some other reports that day. Like, I think Trilly Donovan put out that UofL also met with Josh Schertz's people, and there was somebody else reporting that UofL met with Pat Kelsey. I can't confirm any of that stuff. I can just confirm the Scott Drew stuff. And my understanding that day, and continues to be the case, is that Louisville is prepared to make Scott Drew the third highest paid coach in college basketball. So just behind Bill Self and John Calipari. And I wasn't sure the exact number. I've been told since then by people I trust that they're willing to go as high, at least for just Scott Drew, to $8.5 million, which makes sense. Cause I'd heard third highest paid coach. I think John Calipari made 8.56 million this year. Bill Self was just shy of 10 mil. Those are the two highest paid guys. Drew, in case you're wondering, right now is the sixth highest paid coach in college basketball. So Louisville is, I think he's like 5.5 million, 5.1 million. So Louisville is offering him potentially a significant raise. So that was Thursday. The only thing that I've heard over the weekend is that like the Drew people sort of rebuffed Louisville a little bit. They were kind of like, yeah, you know, we'll see. But that since then, Baylor hasn't ponied up the cash to match Louisville the way that they were kind of anticipating. So Louisville gearing up to make another big swing and kind of come back and say, you know, like let's keep talking about this. Let's see if Baylor doesn't love you. We definitely love you. Are you still in on the, like, Scott Drew is a, if we can somehow make this happen, I'm willing to go all in on Scott Drew.
Yeah, I would be. I mean, obviously to me, like, money's not a thing, but I know to the university, we have a lot out there that we're paying guys that are no longer employed with us. Obviously it's going to be a little bit of a factor, but I think we're going to do whatever we can, you know, obviously to get the program back on track. I would say so far, it's got to be a pretty good sign that we haven't seen any sort of re-up from Scott Drew. Cause I mean, we've seen it from Nate Oates, you know, and this is about the time where if people, you know, are getting their name tossed around in coaching searches, agents play games, and next thing you know, we saw it last year, you get raises with Bruce Pearl or whoever, or not last year, but the last coaching search. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think I would say 90 to 95, maybe even higher percent of the fan base would say that's probably the clear-cut number one choice. But it'll be interesting, you know, if he decides not to come, because the options, I think, to the rest of the fan base probably don't look super sexy.
Well, it's like I think we talked about in the last podcast. When you talk about checking boxes, Scott Drew, he's the only national championship winning coach in college basketball right now that you can see moving for another program. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't happen in college basketball. I think Pat Forty looked it up. And when you talk about coaches that have won national championships at one program and have actually taken jobs at other programs directly, it's only happened twice. And it was like a guy in 1962 and a guy in 1980. So it has not happened in the modern history of college basketball. Now, we got Rick Pitino, but we didn't get him directly from Kentucky. He went to the Celtics and then came to Louisville. So that's a little bit different. So this is, we're trying to do something that's relatively unheard of. And I think our entire basis for even taking this swing is looking at it historically and saying, like, well, you're Baylor and we're Louisville. Like, that seems like this is something that could happen just because of that. Like, I don't think we would go to Kansas and say, you know, we want Bill Self, or, you know, even right now, I don't think you'd go to UConn and say, we want Danny Hurley. But you look at Baylor and you're like, okay, maybe we can get Scott Drew. I think what this comes down to, because let's get to what people want to hear, which is how likely do you think this is? I still, maybe long shot is too strong, but I still feel like it's more likely than that we don't get him than it is that we do get him. But I think what it comes down to is two things. One, does Drew feel like he can get like more money here, both when it comes to NIL and overall salary? And then two, and I think this is the bigger thing, because I think the Baylor will probably match whatever we want to put out there. They've got this gigantic booster, this Foster guy who has buildings named after him down there. And he's apparently said, like, you know, whatever it is, like, I'll pony up. So I think what it comes down to is the ultimate decision will be, does he feel like he can have the same type of success at Baylor moving forward that he's had over the last 5, 6, 7 years? In this new age with NIL and transfer portal and all this stuff, does he feel like he can keep the ball rolling? And I think some of that will come down to how they perform this week in the NCAA tournament. Like, if they, you know, they got their ass kicked in the second round of the Big 12 tournament. If they're a 3 seed this week, they could easily, I think, lose in the second round to, you know, New Mexico and Richard Pitino, and Clemson, you know, maybe Brad Brownell. Like, maybe if he feels like he just doesn't have it going the way that he used to, maybe it's time for a nice restart, a nice recharge at a bigger and better program with more built-in advantages. Because when you look at Baylor, they've lost a little bit of their edge the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. since Jerome Tsang left. They've not been as good defensively. They've lost a little bit of that culture. They've been really good, but they have not been 1 seed good, which is what they were like 2019, 2020, 2021. Like, those teams were elite. They've been good. They haven't been elite. And if he feels like that's a trend that's going to continue, then maybe he looks down the road and says, like, the fans are going to turn on me. Let's go rebuild another program at Louisville. Let's become a hero there. I don't think that he's going to take let his mind go there, but it's possible.
Yeah, I do wonder. Like, me and you, we went to Dayton our freshman year. And how do I say this? we'll just say that, you know, from the opposite sex standpoint, the talent pool wasn't exactly on fire. But God, there was like,
where is this going?
No, but I'm saying there was one like super hot girl there, but like since the talent pool was so low, like it seemed like everyone, it's like shout out Dolores, but it seemed like everyone was like obsessing over this girl. And I'm like, is this what happened? Cause like, yes, Scott Drew is a national title, no doubt. But like you said, the last 2 years, the shine has worn off like a little bit. Yeah, he does check all the boxes, and obviously winning a national title is, I mean, it's the pinnacle in the sport. It's the most you can do. But I don't know, like even before he won a national title and kind of got things rolling there, I mean, there were some years there. And coaches improve. But there were some years I was like, Jesus, this guy's so overrated. He gets players and like he never performs in the tournament, blah, blah, blah. And all it took was like one run to the title and that changed everyone's mind. And like, to be honest, it should. But what I'm saying is like, God, are we just like completely obsessing over this guy from like a title that he won like 3-4 years ago when it seems like God, maybe things have gotten a little bit stale? Like, to me, isn't he the number one choice still? Yeah, he is. But I don't know. Like I said, when the rest of the candidates aren't like super attractive, I'm like, oh, maybe we're obsessing over him more than we should. But I don't know. I mean, again, this is a decision I'm sure Josh Hurd is grappling with, along with, you know, how much money does he want to pay here?
I totally get where you're coming from. I mean, I had some things to say about Scott Drew back in the day, and may or may not have had to have deleted some tweets a couple of years ago when it was possible that he was going to get the job. I mean, he was viewed as like, I honestly think that the turn between like Scott Drew sucks as a coach to Scott Drew's a good coach.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I think it happened that battle for Atlantis championship game in 2016 when they were down like 20 to us in the second half and they came back and beat us. And then that year they were really consistently good. I mean, he had a reputation in the late 2000s for, you know, getting these one and done players, and you know, they had a lot of talent, but he couldn't win with them. And you know, they're obviously cheating down there, and you know, the reports of that going on. And it was just kind of, and his reputation has done a total 180 in the last 10 years or so. I think I get what you're saying about if you took away the national title, would he be this camp? I mean, if you take away the national title, he's a guy without a Final Four. Would he be this can't miss profile? Like, what I keep going back to is you talk about what a gigantic rebuild this is at U of L, and this power program, this proud program in this such low state. The situation that he would walk into here at U of L is still infinitely better than the one that he walked into at Baylor. I mean, you couldn't have taken over a worse job. Baylor, no history of success. They're coming off of, I mean, I would say the worst scandal in the history of college basketball, a player murdering another player and the coaching staff actively working to clean up the details. They weren't allowed to play on TV. They weren't allowed to play in non-conference games. And he still took over that program and pretty quickly built them into like respectability. And then not long after that, had them going to the NCAA tournament. And you know, they went to the Elite Eight in 2012 when they lost to Kentucky, won the national title. And then, you know, the last couple of years, they've blossomed into a national powerhouse. Like, that rebuilding job just makes me feel like, I mean, look, it's a bare minimum. Like, this guy's going to have us back in the NCAA tournament relatively quickly, mm-hmm. and probably like back at the top 25 in the snap of a finger. Like, that's comforting to me. And like, it's the biggest reason why I'm like, yeah, throw the moon at this guy. Because I think there's so many guys out there that I like certain aspects about them, but there's so many things that I just don't know. I know Scott Drew would win here. I'm not sure that he would win national title here, but I know that he would win and put us in a position where somebody else could come in here and win a national title after him. And that's comforting. So $8.5 million, give it to him. Like, let's make it happen. Let's take that swing.
I think for me, the thing that puts him over the top is, and I'm not like ignoring the last 2 years, but like those like 3 years where he had like, you know, the national title jammed in there. I mean, the eye test for those Baylor teams. Oh, yeah. My God. Like, I mean, when they had Davion Mitchell just guarding the absolute piss out of people. I mean, that national title team was, to me, one of the more underrated national title teams, like of probably the past 10, 15 years. I mean, they were dominant. And to see that he's able to get guys, you know, at Waco. And I'm like, God, just, I wonder what he, like, that's what, where my mind goes. Like, I wonder what he could do, you know, with the NIL backing here at, you know, a perennial top 10 program. You know, I know right now it doesn't look too hot, but you just, my mind just races to what it could potentially look like with him.
Now, if we don't get Scott Drew, the most comforting thing that I heard this week, and I put it out there on the website, and then I think a bunch of people backed it up. I think On3 had a story about this, but the most comforting thing that I heard is that our NIL pool, regardless of who we hire next season, is going to be between like $3 to $4 million. That's the number that's out there. We're going to have more NIL than all but a handful of programs in Division One. So that means, like, whoever you hire, as long as they know what they're doing, they're going to be able to go out there and they're going to be able to get players. Like, we should be able to assemble a roster in the transfer portal that's able to compete pretty quickly. And if you have somebody who knows how to coach those guys up and knows how to make them a cohesive unit, then you can be pretty good in year one. Maybe not NCAA tournament good, or, you know, second weekend NCAA tournament good, but good that we're all having fun and it's an enjoyable season. We can all see what's coming up. So that's, to me, that was really reassuring. That was really comforting. Let's talk about the other names that are.
Can I break some news while you're doing this?
Please.
St. Louis in talks with Indiana State's
Josh Schertz. I was good. I was one of the things I was going to get to is that it sounds like Josh Schertz is probably going to take the SLU job. So that started
to look pretty unrealistic when they didn't win their conference tournament, and obviously with them missing the tournament, that would have been a tough one to sell.
It was a perfect storm for him not getting the job this week. I mean, because look at it. They were the third team left out, I think. If you don't have – five bids got stolen yesterday. Five bids, like, got
yesterday
lost.
Yesterday was insane.
It was insane. And if that doesn't – if you just have a wild day where, like, just Oregon and New Mexico win and everything else goes according to plan, NC State loses, the A-10 auto bid goes to Dayton, Florida Atlantic wins the AAC – Indiana State's in the tournament, and then who knows what happens. But you can't hire Josh Schertz without an NCAA tournament. It's just, it's unsellable to the fan base. The other thing that I broke on the show, and I haven't heard this repeated many other places, but this is true. Like, I will tell you, Jerome Tang's not a candidate. Like, we're not going to hire Jerome Tang. And I know he's a name that's been attached to the job for a long time, but I'm told, like, it's not going to happen. Like, there's some stuff out there that makes him unhireable at Louisville, and that's the deal.
Interesting.
Because there'd been they've been kind of like Baylor people had done this thing where they would say, well, Scott Drew's been pursued for other jobs. He's done this before. He strung schools along, and then he's pulled out and propped up one of his guys for the job. And that's what he's doing here. He just wants Jerome Tang to get it. And I'm told, like, that's not an option. Like, we're not going to hire Jerome Tang. So if that's his play, it's not going to really work here. The other names that are out there, I mean, every college basketball person is putting it out there that Dusty May is high on the list. There was some talk at the beginning of the week that we could find ourselves in a scenario where Ohio State and Louisville are competing for Dusty May, and that's not going to happen now because Jake Diebler is going to get the Ohio State job or has the Ohio State job, whichever one. I don't know if that became official today. It's going to happen. Like, Diebler's going to get the full-time Ohio State job.
Are you surprised by that?
Yes.
I am too.
I think it's a big... It's a big guess by them, but
I mean, I've watched them a little bit before and after the Holtman firing, and they do look like a completely different team. So sure. Credit to Diebler. But yeah, I mean, we're talking Big Ten. Now you got these Pac-12 teams coming in next year. You know, that's a roll of the dice there. But sometimes when you have momentum like that, I say momentum, they didn't even make the tournament, but yeah, it's I will say the feeling I get up here in Columbus, like football is different than basketball. I think basketball is more of like a feel good thing up here, and I think that was like a cool story for them. So I think most of them are actually on board.
That's interesting. I mean, I've seen kind of back and forth, but I get why you would do it. I also, you have to recognize that it could be a situation where 2 years down the line, you're like, why did we, like, he's okay, but he's not, like,
right.
We could have gotten some other guys. Now, the Dusty May thing, I feel like he's been propped up as the number two choice by a number of people that are covering the search. it's never been laid out to me that way. That like it's Drew and then May and then it's everybody else. Other people have said that. I can't say that. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if things change now because you're not really competing with Ohio State for him. And Dusty May, like, if he's going to take a step forward, I guess maybe Michigan could get involved, or maybe somebody else could get involved. It sounds like Vandy's going to hire Chris Mack, which is kind of crazy. But where are you on Dusty May right now? Let's say he is the number two option. Are you good with that?
Oh, man, it's tough. Like, it's so funny how, like, one or two games in the NCAA tournament, like, determines how you view a candidate. Like, if Memphis doesn't shit the bed last year against Dusty May in the first round, like, are we talking about this? Like, I know, I mean, like, yeah, obviously he went on to have a great run, but, I mean, we're talking about a couple years here. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's had nice couple years as Florida Atlantic's coach. You know, yesterday, again, and I hate basing this on one game, but you have to say it, yesterday they lose to, you know, a struggling Temple team. And I'm like, gosh, like, to me, if I'm comparing him, and I know people are going to roll their eyes, but if I'm comparing him to like a Mick Cronin, like, Dusty is such a bigger roll of the dice to me. Like you said, like, Mick, you kind of know what your floor is. Like, I mean, I just don't think this hire we can afford to swing and miss. And Dusty, like, yes, like, it could be a home run or it could be a swing and miss. Whereas Mick, like, I know, and I know majority of the fan base probably, you know, roll their eyes at this, but I mean, at least you're probably hitting a single double here. But I don't know. I'm good with right now, like, the safer pick, because I don't think we can afford to fuck this one up. And now we're really on the path to, like, Indiana-ish if we do.
I am too. I mean, it's funny you say Indiana, because I've seen a lot of Indiana people who are like, Dusty reminds us a lot of Archie Miller.
Yeah.
Seems like clearly knows the game, comes from a basketball background, basketball family, great pedigree. But one of the things that people say about him is he's not like, he doesn't like the pomp and circumstance. He's not a big showman. There was some thought that he would choose Ohio State over Louisville because you can fly a little bit more under the radar in Columbus with football being such a big deal than you can at Louisville. Like, he might not handle all the outside noise that great, which that perks my ears up a little bit and makes me concerned. I mean, you mentioned how thin the line is in March, and you know, this is what we do in the sport. Like, you're the line between hero and goat is just so razor thin. If Memphis plays one, like, normal, like, hey, be normal Memphis minute of basketball, then FAU, they had a great year last year. They would have been, what, 31-4? Like, that's still a great year, but it's, like, nobody's talking about Dusty May as a realistic candidate. He's been at FAU, this is his sixth season. And, like, outside of the whole, like, personality, does he have the personality to have the job? Like, the two things that kind of worry me here are, one, he basically brought back his entire team from last year, and they've been worse this year. Like, the metrics, KenPom had them 17 at the end of last year. They're 41st right now. And that's a little bit discouraging. Like, you know, they were preseason top 10. They've not lived up to that billing. They're basically going to start from the same position in this year's NCAA tournament that they did last year. They were a 9 seed last year. They got an 8 this year, which was pretty surprising. Now, if they knock off Connecticut in the second round, I'll be like, okay, come coach the team. But the defense, to me, is the other thing that really worries me. You know, he's coached 6 teams at FAU. They've been inside the top 90 in adjusted defensive efficiency once. And it was last year. They were 34th in that category last season. They're 109th with basically the same team this year. His other numbers, 154th, 192nd, 151st, and then 91st. Offensively, they've been great the last couple of years, but defensively, they've struggled pretty much consistently since he's been there. That's a red flag for me. And I would love to say, well, he'll have better personnel here. He can play a different style. But, like, we don't know that. And like you said, the things we know about a guy like Scott Drew or a guy like Mick Cronin or some of the other players, some of the other coaches that we're talking about, is more like, we know that Mick Cronin can coach defense. We know that Scott Drew can coach defense. We know that some of the other guys on the list can coach defense. we don't know that Dusty May can coach defense consistently here. And like, that's, again, I'm sure I could talk myself into it, but I'm a little bit leery of making him like the number two guy. I kind of look at this and I'm like, are we sure that this is like the can't miss number two guy? If we swing and miss on Scott Drew, who's a very clear number one, it's kind of, it's wild to me.
And I know I'm comparing him to Mick, cause like, I don't know for sure. Just in my mind, like Mick might be a candidate here. And if we're comparing like these two, but like what I know about Mick compared to Dusty May, like I know that this job won't be too big for Mick. Like he's coached in the Big East. Like he's made a Big East championship. He's coached a blue blood UCLA. Yes. Are they like as rabid as us as far as a fan base? No, but like they're still considered a blue blood in college basketball. Like, to me, yeah, it's mixed demeanor. It is what it is. But, like, I think he's going to be able to handle everything that comes with the Louisville job. And, like, as we've seen, the Louisville job is not just basketball. It's a whole lot more. And, like, with Dusty, you know, we're coming from Florida Atlantic. God, I mean, my mind just – I'm not – this is a bad comparison, but, like, I just think of, like, friggin' Steve Kragthorpe from Tulsa when we're talking about, like, pulling from these, like, Scott Satterfield from Appalachian State. Like, geez, like, this is a big step up. I mean, that's a lot to handle, not just from an X's and O's at Louisville standpoint, but, you know, this is a – you're the face of the city and, like, the sport that's kind of the fabric of the city. So – it's, to me, it's more about basketball, and I kind of measure those two things when I, at least when I'm comparing those two candidates next to each other.
Can you imagine Mick Cronin calling riders up at the Derby?
I mean, then that, and there's another, Dusty looks 20,000 times more likable than Mick. Like, I fully admit that, even as a guy that, like,
calling riders up. It's, he's like, can you shut that one up?
The thing is, Mick's...
Make that horse be quiet!
You know Mick's not going to do riders up. Mick is, like, fucking full in. Like, he's like, all right, I got $200,000 on the six here.
Oh, he'll bet half his salary on the first Derby.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. It seems like... I mean, I'm just going off reports from what I see. It seems like those two are mentioned the most as, like, the fallback options, but... You know, there could be other candidates, and maybe you know that that are out there, but those are the two I feel like I hear the most.
Let's talk the other thing about Mick, and we've kind of talked about how I think the last podcast we brought up, you know, he's been to 12 straight NCAA tournaments before this year, all that stuff. But the big thing with him, I think, is still the buyout talk. It's $20 million right now. It's 16 on April 1st. And there's this talk that there's been out there. It's been out there, like, I've heard it before we even knew we were going to have a job opening this year, that there's a loophole in his contract which will potentially remove the entire buyout, or at least significantly lessen it, because UCLA is making the move to the Big Ten. And so this week, I can't get any sort of clarity on this buyout at all from anybody. And Eric Crawford put it out there pretty definitively that, like, buyout's not going to be an option. Somebody at UofL told me, like, the buyout's not really an option. But I reached out to, before Crawford tweeted that, and before this person at UofL reached out, I reached, like there's somebody I know who coaches college basketball, who is coached with Mick, knows Mick real well, like, keeps in close contact with Mick. And I was like, all right, I'm pulling out the big, I've got to go to my ace in the hole here. I'm going to find out. We're going to get to the bottom. I don't have a direct line to Mick Cronin. This is the best I can do. And I'm like, what's the deal with this buyout? And their response was, nobody seems to know. Mick doesn't even really know, I don't think. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? He was like, he thinks he can get it greatly, like, taken down, greatly diminished. And I was like, Mick doesn't even know if he, like, how is this a possible thing that we don't know what's going on with this buyout? But, like, this person at UofL and Crawford, I don't know if we're talking to the same person, they've both said, like, the buyout's not going to be an option for UofL. So I kind of tend to lean toward the buyout not being a real obstacle for UofL, which I think definitely puts Cronin in play. I don't know what's going on there. I can't imagine where I would slot him, but he's definitely on the list.
Let me ask you one thing, and I don't want to turn this into, like, you know, I heard this rumor, this rumor, but, like, I feel like everywhere I read, it's like, why would we want a guy that UCLA is trying to get rid of? Like, is there any truth, like, UCLA's trying to get rid of Mick? I don't know. I feel like no. I read that. Yeah, I didn't think so either. I don't know why I keep seeing that everywhere.
They just gave him that contract extension with a $20 million buyout. Like, no.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not true at all. I mean, I think that there's maybe some understandable unrest after their season this year and maybe thinking it's not going to get better. Because, look, it's a legit concern with Mick. How's he going to handle the transfer portal? He's old school. He doesn't like building rosters this way. The guys that he won with a high level at UCLA were kind of traditionally recruited there, and he developed them over time, and they got better slowly. Like, that's kind of his MO. Like, I think that that's a legit concern with bringing Cronin here. Like, you know, it's not – I think he would get a handle on it, but I don't know that. So, like, that's I get why people are upset by are worried about that for sure. Now, other names that are out there, I mentioned, like, I don't think Tang's is a candidate anymore. Pat Kelsey – Charleston's safely in the NCAA tournament now. They won the Southern Conference. He's a guy that I think is on that list where if he makes a run, could some like win his way into the job. Eric Musselman.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard his name pinged a couple times, even though, not going to lie, I think I'll support whoever we hire, first off. I would have a tough time with that one.
I think also, I mean, look, Josh Hurd said two things that were interesting about the coaching search at his media availability on Wednesday. He talked about, like, he basically said, like, if anybody has a checkered past, they're not an option for me. I think he talked about how he's always had a high threshold for integrity, higher than most is the way that he put it. And now with U of L having its recent history, it has to be even higher than it typically would be. And he talked about not wanting to pay like $10 million upward buyouts. And I think the other thing he talked about, not wanting somebody who was like too old. He's like, I want them to be here for 20 to 25 years. And maybe that nixes at anybody who's in their 60s or 70s. I don't know how, like, Musselman's 60. I don't think you look too deeply into something like that. But I do think it's been out there for a little bit. I've put it out there that, like, the last go around with the coaching search, the consultants, like, are like, I don't know if you can hire Eric Musselman. There's some stuff there that, you know, guy likes to party a little bit. Like, maybe that comes out a little bit if he's in a big city like Louisville, where it's harder to keep stuff like that under wraps. So I don't know if Musselman is a legit option. No idea, but his name, like you said, it's been pinging out there a little bit more. Jamie Dixon popped up on Eric Crawford's list last week. I'll say one thing about Jamie Dixon, because people acted like when Jamie Dixon's name came out there, it was a guy who's a 7th and 8th grade C team coach.
Dude, I mean, I thought the same thing. I was like, I mean, do some research here, people.
He's at TCU. They made the NCAA tournament tonight. They're a 9 seed. When he got to TCU, they've been to the NCAA tournament two times in the history of that program. They've been playing basketball for a long time. He's taken them four times since he's been there. Then again, not my first choice, but the notion that this guy is just some fucking moron who's never won a basketball game in his life is just absolutely amazing. Like, he is another guy. He's kind of like Cronin. I feel like he would come here. He could at least get us out of that hole and win consistently, and then maybe set the stage for somebody who could come in here and win at an even higher level afterwards. After we
Jamie
get out of there.
Jamie Dixon is like, if you're in the real world and have a job, like, he's like your new boss that gets hired that you're like, fuck, this guy's going to like make me turn in all my reports. Like, he's not going to be a whole lot of fun. Like, we're not going to go out and like party together, but like, we're probably going to grow as a sales team because of this guy. Like, he seems like he has his shit together, but sure. There's really not a whole lot sexy about him. But I mean, he turned Pitt into a powerhouse when he was there. And then, you know, yes, it went stale at the end there, and TCU
it went stale, but they were still going to NCAA tournaments every year.
No, 100%. Like, you're exactly correct. And then to like do what he's done at TCU, I mean, fucking TCU, like, they should have beat, was it Arizona a couple years ago in the tournament?
Yeah.
Like, I they play their ass off if you ever watch them. Like, that, I mean, I know, like, we used to beat them a lot with Rick. And I know that he got us a couple times. I think maybe that might be in the back of people's minds. But, I mean, that guy can coach.
He can. This is going to be his third straight NCAA tournament appearance. And you're right. At a place like TCU where they're not used to winning like this ever. You could do worse than Jamie Dixon. A couple other like things that have happened. Nate Oates got the contract extension this week from Alabama. He's going to get paid even more. I think what we're finding out is it's going to be really hard to pick off coaches from Alabama and the Big Ten moving forward because the money gap now is becoming so extreme. Like Jerry Stackhouse, we found out this week, had a buyout of over $15 million at Vanderbilt. They have all this football money floating around now, all this money from these new TV deals. Like they can pay these guys as much as they want. Like, you know, we're not going to be able to go in and just get coaches, I think, from these conferences anymore. Nate Oates already had a $10 million buyout, and he gets the contract extension this week. Chris Beard, also from the SEC, got an extension. We weren't considering him anyway, but people were talking about him. Todd Golden at Florida, a name that I'd casually tossed out as, hey, if he got hot, maybe he's somebody who could, you know, find his way into the job. He gets a contract extension there. It's like, so you've got some guys that I think were on that hot March name scenario that I've tossed out a couple of times that I think now are off that list. But there's still some guys out there. Let me Will Wade is a name that fans have been bringing up a bunch, I feel like, this week. I think maybe they watched him dominate the Southland Conference championship game. They're at 12 seed. They're going to play Gonzaga this week. I think if you hold Josh to his word about integrity and not wanting anybody with any sort of checkered past, like, he's off, right? Like, he has an active show cause right now against him still. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who, like, he was brazenly cheating. I know what he was doing then is, like, technically by the rules now, but he also was just, like, the thing that concerns me the most isn't that he was cheating. I think everybody's been cheating for a long time, but he was really dumb about it. Like he got caught openly talking about it on phones multiple times, talking about, like, oh yeah, we're going to pay this guy that much, and Javonte Smart, make him a strong ass offer, and I've had worse players that I've given more money to, and, you know, better players that I've given less money to. I was like, Jesus Christ, like, this guy just had no regard for anything. And also, like, I think Will Wade would win here. I do think he's a good coach. We're acting like he's been to a bunch of – he's never been past the Sweet 16. So, there are still a ton of question marks about Will Wade, even if you didn't have the checkered NCAA past. But where would you be if you know, Josh just says, hey, I've done my due diligence. Fuck the NCAA. Let's bring in Will Wade. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, I'd be okay with it.
I kind of would too.
Like, but at the same time, I'm with you. I don't think Josh is going to do that. Like, I think he was hired. Like, part of his, like, hire is, like, I want to clean up everything. And, like you said, everything he did now is now legal. But it just seems like that's not the path that he wants to take for his hirings. So I would be, you know, I don't want to say shocked, but I would be very surprised if we went that route. However, if he did, you know, it doesn't take much for me to get on board. I'd get on board pretty easily.
I mean, Will Wade would galvanize the fan base. He would come in here, he'd wear like a 2013 banner t-shirt the first day or something like that. Like I could see him doing that, and everyone would be like, hell yeah, middle fingers up. Now, what I think what Josh knows is, like, it's such a layup storyline for any national columnist to write about. If you hire Will, like, hiring Will Wade from a negative headline standpoint would be worse for you, I think, than hiring Chris Beard or hiring some of these other guys, because every, like, the Pat Fortys of the world, you hire Will Wade, everybody writes the exact same column, which is the names may have changed, but Louisville's still Louisville. Like, it's still about winning above all else. And, you know, it's like, Louisville's always going to be the dollar, like, this renegade program hiring a renegade coach. And, like, we may not care about that. Like, personally, I don't really care about that at this point, because fuck the NCAA and fuck public perception. But I think Josh does. And so I think for that reason and for a couple of other reasons, Wade's not really an option here. And that's, you know, I get it. Like, I understand where he's coming from. Like, he's got a job to do. He feels like that's part of it.
Can we play a game?
Of course.
Can I play? I want you to rank these coaches.
Okay.
We're going to take Dusty May and Scott Drew out, okay?
Okay.
We're going to go Mick Cronin. We're going to go Jamie Dixon. We're going to go Will Wade. We're going to go Eric Musselman and Sean Miller.
Oh, man. Again, like, I think the two of these guys, there's no chance. I probably would go Wade one.
Yeah.
I probably would go Cronin 2. 3 is tough for me. 5 is easy. Sean Miller's last on that list for me. I probably would go. I think I'd go Dixon 3 and then Musselman 4 and then Miller 5.
Why the hate for Miller?
I think he's kind of done. I don't think he's a good fit here. I don't think that he's, yeah.
I don't know. I'd put Musselman last, and then I would probably put, you know, I love Mick, but I really think Will Wade would just kill it here. I'm like talking myself more into him, like the further along I go here, but
it's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but I'd put Wade 1, Cronin 2, and then Dixon 3, probably Miller 4, and then Musselman 5.
Are you ready to get into a little bit of a conspiracy thing?
Yeah.
Let's have some fun. So I've been thinking about this, and like literally on my phone, I feel like every hour of every day, just like talking with people about this, like trying to find out more. Like I'm breaking my brain. I can see how people fall down conspiracy rabbit holes when you're so focused on something and you're trying to analyze every angle. So on, I guess this was Thursday night. Friday. I put the thing out there about the meeting happened between Giroux people and U of L people on Thursday. And on Friday, this was Thursday night. Somebody associated with big name with U of L reached out. I've never talked to this person. I've certainly never like texted or like talked to this person on the phone. And they got my number and they texted me. And they just wanted to say, like, hey, like, what you're hearing is right. I'm not sure where you're getting this, but like you're correct. And they clarified a couple of things, and then they sent some other stuff that I cannot pass along. If people tell me explicitly not to say something that I don't, if they don't, then I share it with everybody. So my initial response was like, cool. Like, glad I got it right. Glad that it's out there. I feel like I'm kind of in the know now. I know that I'm in the know now. And then my second thought was like, why is this person reaching out to me? Like, why are they doing this? Why are they just checking in to be like, hey, you're right. Good job. And then I started thinking, the one thing that everybody's heard about this search, local reporters, fan reporters, national media, people who just follow other teams, everybody's heard the same thing about, it's Scott Drew. Louisville's going to take this gigantic swing at him. He's the number one choice. There's not even really a close number two. It's Scott Drew and everybody else. And it's always like the language is always really similar. The language is always, it's always framed kind of the same way. And I was like, what if, you know, Josh Hurd wants this out there? Like Josh Hurd, you know, people have said there's no benefit into having this known publicly at this time of the year where, you know, Scott Drew's not going to leave his team before the NCAA tournament. You know, you typically want to play things closer to the vest. And then you kind of, this guy's team loses. All of a sudden, he's rumored as a candidate for the Louisville job. And then, bam, he's your coach in 48 hours. And I was like, what if that's what's going on here?
Yeah.
What if this is all a big smokescreen? What if there's a name out there that just nobody's been talking about? And when the NCAA tournament gets going, we're going to hear when Baylor loses that Scott Drew's not a candidate for the Louisville job. But then out of nowhere, maybe some team gets upset. Maybe they, you know, play to the Elite Eight, Sweet 16. There starts to be a little bit of buzz when this team, like Herring, he's maybe in talks with Louisville. And then, bam, he's your head coach. And I was like, who could that be? I'm just, like, thinking around. And again, like, I'm throwing this. I threw this out there, and people acted like it was a real thing. They're like, I think the mystery candidate is so-and-so. And I was like,
oh, listen, I play this game, too, and I rack my brain. So I'm interested to see who landed on, you know, your list here.
Well, I was thinking, like, Nate Oates. And because he had, like, seemed like a logical candidate. He was on everybody's list at the beginning, and then you just didn't hear anything about him. And then he gets the contract extension, so he's out. And then my mind kind of went to, like, Shaka Smart. You know, he's seems like a logical candidate. Winning at a high level at Marquette. I know he wanted the job back in 2018. There's a lot of talk about that. Less so in 2022 because he was just making the move from Texas to Marquette. Like, what about him? And then you're thinking of, like, other big names out there that just for whatever reason have not been talked at all about as being candidates for this job, like Brad Underwood at Illinois.
Yeah.
Somebody like that. Mark Few at Gonzaga. Maybe he pulls a Chris Peterson in like football where he's at Boise State forever and nobody's ever. And then bam, he just decides, well, okay. Like I actually do want to leave. Maybe like something like that. But now my mind's like, I'm buying into this conspiracy, the mystery theory candidate where it's like, I don't even want to talk about it because I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to throw out names out there, but maybe Josh has a plan here, and he's just this crazy genius, and the whole Scott Drew thing is just a giant smokescreen because he knows we can never actually get Scott Drew. What do you think about that?
I've had the exact same thoughts. It's funny. Brad Underwood came up for me as well when I was thinking about that.
Matt Painter, Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, Painter. God, there's no way.
By the way, people keep bringing up T.J. Otzelberger now because Iowa State played so well. I'm like, $17 million buyout. Wife loves Ames. She's from there. He's like the all-time scoring leader of the school. The AD's his best friend. He may go somewhere at some point in time, but it's not going to be now, unfortunately, because he's great.
By the way, if this is common knowledge, I don't know. Do we know? Because like Josh Hurd said, he's not hiring a search firm or whatnot, but he has like a small. Did he say three-person committee?
Two or three people that he's going to lean on to help.
Do we have any inkling who that is? You may know, and maybe you can't say. I have no idea, but I don't know who it is, and I was curious if you know.
I know one person, and I can't say.
Okay, no, that's fine.
I can tell. I mean, I'll text you. We're done here. But,
yeah.
But I can't
say. I'm interested to see who that is. But, no, I mean.
Do you want to guess? And I can just not say anything if you guess right?
I would think Jay Wright has a pretty big say. I bet he's leaning on him. That would be one of my guesses. But anyways, well, you're not saying anything, so we'll keep it right here. But with that being said, this is interesting because I don't know. Like we've said this, a bunch of times. It really seemed like we got pigeonholed with Kenny early last time, and like. We didn't really get to see a true Josh Hurd search. And I feel like this time it's like, all right, like, let's see, because if he does, bam, like, come out in surprises like that, it's like, holy shit, all right, like, this guy, not that he doesn't know what he's doing if he doesn't do that, but it would just be interesting because I don't really know, like, how he works behind closed doors.
Right, yeah, I've got no idea, but it would be crazy if he was just like, we're all like, woe is me. We're not going to get Scott Drew. We're talking about like, oh my God, I can't. And it's like, bam, Fred Hoiberg. He's coming to Louisville. Like, it'd just be crazy.
Like every name you say, even like the ones that I think are good, I'm like, I have to like take a pause to like talk myself into them. I'm like, Nebraska. Okay.
I would take Shaka Smart for sure. Shaka's a guy that I could get excited about.
Yeah. I know, here's another name, and I know at least some fans probably at least thought about, but I know it's not going to happen. But it's like Richard Pitino's doing a pretty decent job down there at New Mexico. But I like the history with Rick, there's just absolutely no way. But it's a little intriguing and fun to think about.
I mean, every time they win, I get like a billion like little Rick is the pick messages. Imagine that amplified by 100 if they beat Baylor in the second round. It's like, do we really want Scott Drew?
Our fan base when it comes to the search, like we're living day by day. It seems like, and that will definitely get people's heads spinning for sure.
I saw. I mean, everyone's so desperate for information. I know that there's like people. Truly Donovan has this Discord, which I still don't even really know what it is, but people always send me the screenshots from when he mentions Louisville stuff, which I appreciate. And he's usually pretty, at least when it comes to the coaching search stuff, he's been pretty spot on. And there's that coaching changes account on Twitter, which I'd always heard people were like, yeah, it's like 25% accurate. And they kind of know it. Like they willingly say like, we don't have great sources. We kind of just throw whatever's out there, but they had this big rundown like earlier this week about, they kind of were regurgitating some of the Scott Drew stuff that I'd said and other people had said. And they had this, they met with Josh Schertz today as well. And they're going to meet with Jerome Tang tomorrow. And also like these boosters, like they really want Richard Pitino. And like, I was shocked, but they really do. And they had a couple other like weird tidbits. And the Jerome Tang stuff, I was like, well, I know that that's not true. And then somebody who listens to my radio show showed me like the DMs of him like sending the coaching and like just totally trolling this coaching changes account and being like, I'm going to try to get him to say something about Josh Pastner tomorrow. And I was like, come on, man. It was very funny, but it was obvious like this guy had just been trolled and was just throwing something out there that was not true. So always have to be a little bit hesitant with information that's just flying out there, but you never know. But it's fun. I get why people get fully into it. We all want to know what's going on. And I've done my best to put out there what I think is certainly what I know is going on and maybe what I think could go on. But I'm sure that there's like, what I know is probably like 20% of it. Which is kind of exciting. Who knows what's going on right now, but hopefully we get to a conclusion that's fitting and exciting for everybody. I don't have any, I mean.
Are we cheering for Baylor to lose early?
Yeah, we want Baylor losing. We want Scott Drew in front of the media as little as possible. We don't want him answering questions. The less we hear, the better on this front. Like, people are like, why aren't we hearing anything positive?
I totally agree.
You don't want to hear anything. Like,
yeah. If he talks and like is like, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. It's like, well, now we're fucked, guys.
No, yeah, I mean, the only thing he can say between now and when he loses in the tournament is that he's not coming. He's not going to be like, I love the Derby, wink, wink. Let's see how we play tomorrow against New Mexico. Like, it's just like that's not going to happen.
I keep seeing like tweets. It's like, all right, well, this guy needs to just shit or get off the pot. He's coaching in like the first round of the tournament as a 3 seed. Like, he's not going to make a decision right now.
Yeah, the fact that he hasn't said anything yet is exciting. You want him saying nothing, and you want him out of the tournament as quickly as possible. Like, you want to expedite this process if you can make it happen. Same with other candidates that you like. Look, we can talk to Mick Cronin now. You can talk to Eric Musselman now. I think you'll be able to talk to Dusty May pretty soon because I don't think there's any chance in hell that they're going to beat Connecticut. But it's – who knows? We'll see what goes down. We don't have to get into Selection Sunday stuff. We also have to plan – I mean, you're in Disney World this week. If something happens, like, I'm going to have to find somebody to come on here with and do the show while you're gone. We'll have to drag Jeff Greer out of retirement or somebody and just do a immediate emergency podcast. But the people will know.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get the message out somehow, but I would rather not be, you know, on the Tower of Terror as we announce Eric Musselman. So I
don't, you're like,
jump on. It's like, see you, Kim.
Kyle Smith.
Oh man, no, we're.
I can't believe we hired Mark Pope.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. Come on, Josh. I know you got it in you, buddy. Just do something good here.
Let's make it happen. We do have to remind you guys before we get out of here about our friends over at Homefield Apparel because they sponsor the hell out of this podcast, and we love them for it. Use our promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout. They've got a bunch of new gear just in time for March Madness, a bunch of shooting shirts, which are fantastic, some new T-shirts as well, new basketball shorts. They've got joggers. They've got hoodies, all the stuff that you know and love from over there at Homefield Apparel. Over 150 schools to choose from. They've got great Cardinal gear, we know that, and use that promo code CHRONICLE15 when you check out to save yourself 15% off your first purchase from Homefield. Do you have a quick, I tell you what, I can give a little mic in the mud real quickly.
Perfect, yeah, go for it.
So it's in line with the Disney thing. So we flew down. I was very concerned about the flight. John is 2 and has never flown. Virginia's 4 and has never flown. And, you know, we had to worry about the seating. So we seated things. So Mary sat between the two kids. And, you know, it's we have 2 rows of 3 on the plane. And so I sit on the end of the other row, like right across from them. So I can be there to help. But like, you know, I only so much I can do from that spot. And so, and let me preface this by there's no way for me to tell the beginning part of the story without making it sound like I'm trying to sound cool. But I'm going to do it anyway. So just bear with me. So on the plane, and there's like two women. Older women to my left. One's like, I'm a great grandmother. And she's like, I'm a grandmother. And like, she's actually my mom. And you know, they're very sweet. And they're talking to me about my kids. John's having a hard time. He's kind of screaming and he's having trouble pooping. And they're asking me about that stuff. So they're very nice. So about midway through the flight, I'm like leaning over and talking to my wife and we're trying to communicate. And the woman who's sitting behind my wife and my kids on the end there, she taps me on the shoulder and she says, can I ask you what your name is? And I said, my name's Mike. And she points to this younger woman sitting to her right. And she goes, she thinks she knows you. And the younger woman, she goes, are you Mike Rutherford? And I said, yeah. And she goes,
Mike Rutherford, king of the skies.
King of the skies is what they call me here. Captain Boeing is what they call me. And she goes, I thought that was you. Sorry if this is going to be weird, but she shows me her phone and she goes, I took a picture of you and I sent it to Peyton Siva, who I'm really good friends with. And I was like, is this Mike Rutherford? And Peyton was like, yeah, that's him and all this stuff. And like, we're going back and forth. And like, you know, we start talking. I'm like, you know, what are you guys doing down here in Orlando? Like, we're taking our kids to Orlando. And very sweet, very nice. And I was like, give Peyton my best. Mm-hmm. And I lean back into my seat and the older woman to my left, she goes, are you somebody famous? And I said, oh, no, no, it's nothing like that. And she goes, well, she goes, what's your name? And I said, I'm Mike Rutherford. And she goes, well, what do you do? And I said, oh, I was like, I write about sports and I've got a, like, I have a sports radio show that's on back in Louisville. And she says, is it good? And I said, no. And she goes, oh. And then neither one of us had any idea what to say. Because I'm like, you know, I'm like 60% joking. I'm like, oh, no. Like, I'm like, no, it's not good. And she just goes, oh. And then I think I had to act like there was something going on with my kids. I'm like, oh, does John need like more? Does he need more water? And it ruined the rest of the flight. I had no idea what to say to these people. She's like, is it good? I was like, no. And she's like, oh.
God. I and wish you would have like thrown her a business card as you were walking off. Just leave it on her pullout tray there. Oh, that's so funny.
I mean, she's sitting there thinking she's met like some like, I don't know, like reality TV star or something crazy. And no, I'm just like this shitty radio show host from Louisville, Kentucky. And she's just so disappointed. I was like, I had no idea how to strike up the conversation after that point. It ruined the beginning of the trip for me. But what are you going to do?
Mike okay. Rutherford, king of the
king skies. Of the skies.
Oh, God, that's great. No, I love that. That's a good one.
All right. Like I mentioned earlier, whenever something happens with the coaching search, if there's big news out there or if, you know, if I hear anything, we will pod this week, whether it's with or without Dan. Maybe you just get a solo, like 15-minute Mike Rutherford pod. I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go. But Dan, safe travels to Disney. Send me some pictures of the teacups. And we'll enjoy the March Madness here. We will talk to you sometime very, very soon. Hopefully sooner rather than later. Until then, enjoy all the basketball this week. Go U of L women. Let's knock Haley Van Lith out of the tournament. Let's beat Middle Tennessee. Beat LSU. Get back to a 7th straight Sweet 16. Let's make that happen. We'll talk to you guys soon. Go Cards.
Go Cards.